This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is David Joy, author of his award-winning debut novel, Where All the Light Tends to Go. Welcome to our program.
Well, thank you for having me.
What's happening in Jacob McNeely's world as your book opens up?
So Jacob McNeely's 18-year-old who has dropped out of high school 2 years earlier. So he dropped out in 10th grade to work in the family business, the family business being that his father sells methamphetamine. And so as the book opens, Jeremy is looking at all the kids he grew up with, and they're leaving whatever they're going off to do, and he realizes he's stuck there.
Where does he live?
He lives in Cashers, North Carolina, which is about 20 miles south of where I live. It's in the county I live in. It's a really interesting place because it's typically dark. This story's very dark. There are no happy endings. You know, I joke around a lot of times. When I get done reading, everybody's kind of sitting there with their jaws open.
At a book signing?
Yeah, or crying or something like that. And you know, I always joke, it's a feel-good book of the year. Because it's very much, you know, not a feel-good book. It's an emotional-heavy book.
Well, you've said that where you grew up, people were headed for prisons or caskets. Why has your life taken a different turn?
I think a lot of it had to do with my own family. You know, I was granted a lot of opportunities that a lot of kids I grew up with didn't have. The other thing is that I have a lot of privilege that a lot of people don't have, in a sense that boils down to the fact I'm white and I'm male. And, you know, it doesn't get much more privileged than that in America. And so I have a lot of opportunities that people I grew up with didn't have. A lot of the people that I grew up with were born with their backs against the wall. And very early on, I think they began to realize that the only way they could see getting out of where they were was, you know, was a darker world, you know, typically drugs, typically a violent world.
Well, you've said that the two biggest drug epidemics in Appalachia are methamphetamine and prescription drugs. I understand about the meth, but why is this true of prescription drugs?
I think prescription drugs is the biggest epidemic in America. And I think, you know, if you want to trace that back, you could trace it all the way back to the 70s, but really the past 25 years. Now, I mean, if you look at the, you know, what's happening in suburban America now with fairly well-off white kids being addicted to heroin, that's coming out of former addictions to Oxycontin. We were having that conversation on the ride over here, is that I could walk in any house in America and I could open up a medicine cabinet and I could find something within that medicine cabinet to abuse. There is a major problem with the way that prescription drugs are being handed out to children, to adults, and until that is addressed, I don't see that problem going away.
It's a stereotype that Appalachia is a violent, drug-ravaged, poverty-stricken region. In your book's North Carolina world, it's all those things.
Yeah.
But what else is it? What does the stereotype miss?
I think people always like to speak in universalities because it allows them to try and, you know, get a grasp on something that's big. That's the problem. That's where that stereotype comes out of. And it comes out of, you know, that's the only thing they see. Or, you know, a documentary like Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia or something. And they think that's Appalachia. You know, if I think about the people in this book that to me speak of where I come from, one of them would be the minister. You know, and at this funeral, nobody's going to be at that funeral, and that bothers him. And so he asked people in his congregation to stay there so that the pews won't be empty. And so for me, he speaks of that. You know, that I can take you to a man, you know, whose family goes back to the first land grants, a man who, you know, who's got candy roaster pumpkins sitting on his floor right now, who would tell you stories, old-time storyteller. I could take you and show you a place just like what I write about. I could take you down the street and show you a kid that's growing up in a $1 million house in a gated community. Or we could drive down to Asheville and see, you know, all kinds of things. And all of those are Appalachian realities. And so I think anytime you try to speak in universalities.
All or never.
Yeah, you know, you're always on dangerous ground.
Where were you living and what was your day job when you got this book sold?
When I wrote this book, I was working two jobs. I just quit a job at a newspaper. I'd taken a job as a receptionist at a historical society. I was working there in the day. I was working as a building supervisor of a community recreation center at night. And so I was working those two jobs when I wrote this book and when I sold it.
When your book was first released, you wrote, "Until this past year, I've never been out of the South, never really been out of North Carolina, and certainly never have been on an airplane." Is that a true quote?
Oh, yeah.
Now that you're on a dozen city tour with your new paperback, what's been the best part about this new chapter in your life?
I think the traveling still scares me in a lot of ways because I would never leave my county. I would stay there until the day I died, honestly. I think what's interesting to me are things like landscape, like driving here just now, you know, and the way that getting to see places that I've only ever, you know, seen in books. The other thing that interests me is people. It's typically not the people that I interact with at a bookstore necessarily. It's people who have absolutely no clue who I am. I love the drivers. The conversations with drivers are the highlight of my trip a lot of times.
The people who pick you up at the airport and take you to the bookstore.
Yeah, like for instance in Los Angeles. I mean, Los Angeles is crazy compared to where I'm from. But I had this conversation with this guy, and he was Middle Eastern, but he was one of the smartest men I've ever met, and it's because he sits in that car every day and he listens to audiobooks. He's one of the most well-read people that I've ever encountered. And we talked about books, we talked about philosophy, we talked about, you know, everything under the sun. And I would have never met an individual like that where I live. And so for me, that's fun.
The people you meet.
Yeah.
One of the ways you've described your novel writing process is comparing it to making a clay pot.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I think that metaphor comes from, you know, my mom was a potter, but I think the initial draft is like digging clay in the sense that, you know, it's not very fun, it's work, and it's very difficult work at times. The revision process is when you get to put it on a wheel, and that's when, you know, that's when a book takes shape, and that's when a book is really sculpted, is in that revision process. And for me, that's what's fun. The initial draft typically is very hard on me, but the revision process is, I love it. What I'm working on now is a little bit different in the sense that the initial draft has been surprisingly just rocketing through it.
And that's not your second novel, because going to be published next year?
Yeah.
This is your third novel?
Yeah, yeah. And so in the past, you know, 2.5 weeks, I wrote 30,000 words on that novel. And I honestly think that if I hadn't had to leave, I think if I just stayed at my house, I would have finished that novel by the end of February.
30,000 words?
Yeah.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
Writing on a laptop?
Yeah, yeah. I've tried writing longhand, but I edit so much as I'm writing that what ends up happening is I just scratch things out, right over top of it, scratch it out until the whole page is just scratched
pretty
out.
Pretty hardy.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the name of your next novel?
The next novel is titled The Weight of This World. Yeah, it's due out next year.
And will it have that same sense of place and location that your first book has had?
Yeah, yeah. It's set very specifically in Jackson County. You know, that's the place that I know well. And so I don't venture outside of that.
Well, thank you. My guest is David Joy, author of Where All the Light Tends to Go, published by Putnam. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.
Thank you.
You're welcome.